You're listening to JD and Tammy Rucker as we deliver the NOQ report, or as we like to call it, the NOQ report. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and enjoy.
COVID-19 is real. I want to be clear about that up front because I think that a lot of times people listen to my show, they watch the show, whatever. They read my writing over at NOQreport.com. And they come to the conclusion that I fall into the category of, oh my gosh, you know, COVID-19, there's only been probably 3,000 deaths, and it's actually just a mild cold, and it's, you know, this big, huge conspiracy between the Chinese Communist Party and the Biden administration. And okay, well, so maybe that last part might be true, but I'm not one who thinks that, oh, COVID-19 is nothing to worry about. COVID-19 has everybody who supposedly died from COVID-19 probably has had gunshot wounds or a motorcycle accident. No, I've actually known people who died from the disease. And when I say have died from the disease, I say this, you know, people say, well, do they die from it, or do they die from complications, or do they have pre-exist? The way that I look at it is this. If somebody would have died, whether or not they had COVID-19, then they didn't die from COVID-19. Somebody gets stabbed in the heart and they had COVID-19. They did not die from COVID-19. They died from getting stabbed in the heart. But if they died as a result of complications caused by COVID-19, I do consider that to be a COVID death. Now, do I think that the numbers are inflated? Absolutely. I'm certain of it. Okay. We've seen enough anecdotal evidence, and more importantly, we've seen enough cover up of the evidence, and not just in New York, not just Andrew Cuomo. We've seen enough cover-up of the evidence to know for sure that the numbers have been inflated to some extent. But with that said, COVID-19 is a real disease, which is why we have to have a plan forward. This can't just be a matter of, oh, you know, open everything up and throw away your face masks, forget about social distancing, forget about, you know, hand sanitizer. Everybody just hug and kiss, and the kids can blow snot on each other and everything's fine. Pretend like nothing is bad. Okay, I'm not a big fan of that. That notion. But we have to look at this from the perspective of doing the most good and doing the least harm. Are the lockdowns harming us? Yes, especially when it comes to schools, and especially when it comes to the economy. But there are other effects. There's a psychological effect that nobody's talking about. Well, not nobody, but nobody in mainstream media will say. They're not talking about the sharp rises in drug overdoses, the humongous increases. I mean, it's so big, the rare numbers that you're able to find, and I say rare because a lot of them are being suppressed. The numbers on suicides right now, I think that if more people knew the suicide numbers, the depression numbers, the drug overdose numbers, they would say, wow, COVID-19 lockdowns are killing as many, if not more, people than the disease itself. But that's for another discussion. Today we're going to have here, in actually just a few minutes, going to have Dr. Marilyn Singleton, who, this lady, I mean, everything I've read about her, I haven't spoken to her yet, but everything I've read so far has been phenomenal. I mean, her perspectives, her understanding, just a true intellectual. She's a medical doctor, and she has her law degree, or her JD. So yeah, I think she's a pretty clever person. we will soon get to find that out for ourselves. But first, I want to give some shout outs to Special Ops. Love the guys over at Special Ops. They've given me this platform to be able to do a whole lot. Gotten us on terrestrial TV and all these other various venues, some great stuff. Big shout out to Bill McIntosh, new podcaster, by the way. I can't wait to hear more about, get him out there. And then of course my good friend Jerry McLaughlin over at Special Guests. His Special Ops channels have been phenomenal. He's gotten some great hosts, and I'm very blessed and pleased to be one of them. Of course, shout out to freedomfirstnetwork.com. I promise every day I'm going to get my content updated on there. I will. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Lord willing. But we have to We have to get some sanity when it comes to COVID-19, when it comes to the lockdowns, face masks, vaccines, whatever. We've got to get the schools open. We have to have a lot of things. And I'm going to make sure to ask Dr. Singleton, how do we do these things? Let's not just say, oh, it's all a fraud. Oh, Dr. Fauci sucks. Let's get to some actual real solutions from somebody who knows what they are talking about. So we'll get to her momentarily. But first, let's talk coffee.
Can you smell it? It's your favorite freshly ground coffee brewing in your favorite cup. If you're anything like me or my family, coffee is essential for our mornings. And even more essential is good quality coffee. Well, Freedom First Coffee is our preferred choice. Made from organically grown beans from Mexico and Peru, that are then roasted here in the USA. So head on over to freedomfirstcoffee.com and choose our Founders Blend in medium or dark roast, ground or whole bean. That's freedomfirstcoffee.com. And make sure you use promo code NOCK, that's N-O-Q, for 10% off your order. And if you really want to be a freedom lover, choose a monthly subscription so you will never be without your Morning Joe. Again, that's freedomfirstcoffee.com.
Our next guest is an anesthesiologist and past president of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. She graduated from Stanford and earned her MD at UC San Francisco Medical School. Not content to just be a doctor, she juggled surgery with attending UC Berkeley Law School, where she obtained her JD. She also teaches classes on recognizing elder abuse and constitutional law for non-lawyers. And everything that I have learned about her has really made me smile, because here is a doctor and a lawyer who is actually telling the truth. I am very pleased and blessed to have Dr. Marilyn Singleton joining us today. Doctor, how are you doing today?
I am just great. And thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, thank you for coming on. This is something that, you know, this is an important topic. We've covered a lot of politics and a lot of culture and a lot of even faith-based items in recent weeks, but something that's been at the top of the mind for everybody, whether they're apolitical or not, is COVID-19. How can we avoid it? It has changed everything in our lives. And an article you wrote very recently was really caught my attention. And it's one that made me do a lot of research on you. And it's like I said, I've been very, very pleased and very impressed. The article was titled "Using COVID Fear to Divide and Rule." Now, if you would give us a brief overview of what you're saying here and tell us how much you love Dr. Fauci.
What drew me to this concept was, we have had pandemics, epidemics, things that actually were quite deadlier, but not as transmissible in the past. And we've dealt with it without the help of the media, with columns along every newscast saying how many cases, how many have died, how many around the world. And of course, never distinguishing between a case, which epidemiologically would be someone who is sick, versus someone who has been infected with the SARS-CoV-2 virus. That's the virus that causes the disease of COVID-19. So there are many, many people who've come in contact. In fact, just recently, Dr. Marty McCurry from Hopkins, who's well-respected, not some crazy person, says that he believes that up to 50% or more of people have actually been exposed to and infected with the SARS-CoV-2 virus. So going all the way back to the Diamond Princess, that was a closed group of people, they found that 40% of the people were asymptomatic. And this is something we have to keep in mind, that a lot of people have been infected. A lot of people haven't gotten sick. And for those who have gotten sick, we seem to have been withholding treatment. And this is quite bothersome.
It is. And there seems to be, you know, I don't want to go dive right into conspiracy here, but there seems to be a concerted effort to suppress some very, very scientifically sound, medically demonstrable treatments out there. And this has been going on from the beginning, treatments that could prevent and or help those who get in. This isn't a medical show, so I'm not asking you to give medical advice as far as what people can or should do. But would you agree that, you know, without, I hate to use the word conspiracy, I personally don't, but a lot of people do. I mean, is this being used, as you say, as a tool for nefarious reasons, in your opinion?
I do believe that part of the COVID hysteria, and when I say that, I want to be very clear that COVID-19 is a disease. COVID-19 has significant symptoms. COVID-19 does indeed have people where the symptoms drag on, even though they apparently are well. So that being said, we seem to be getting a mixed message. On one hand, we're told, you're going to die. And then when doctors come up with an early treatment or prophylactic treatment, suddenly, whoa, we can't use that. And Dr. Fauci is famous for saying in the beginning, there weren't randomized controlled studies. Well, there have been multiple drugs that have come on the market de novo, right, with no randomized controlled studies. So that was a pretty bogus excuse. And what it seems to be, I won't use the word conspiracy, let's just say a bias toward pricey pharmaceutical agents. Let's put it that way. So many of the early treatment drugs are cheap, they're generic, and easily obtainable, readily available. And the key is, if you're going to treat somebody with COVID, you have to do it early. So many studies that poo-pooed hydroxychloroquine, they were giving it to people on death's door. Well, let me tell you, as somebody who resuscitates people for a living, not a lot of things work when somebody's on death's door. So those studies really don't mean a whole lot. And it's bothersome to us as physicians that we're used to doing things that help patients. And especially if someone has the potential to die, we're not going to just sit by and let them die. We're going to do whatever we can do. I think back to the emergency room way back when somebody would come in with a stab wound to the heart or something, and you knew you had to open their chest right there and squeeze their heart. Did anybody have a mask on? No. Sometimes we just took iodine and squirted it on our hands. You're not going to do the 10-minute scrub. And, you know, you do what you have to do to save a life. And this is why a lot of primary care doctors and endocrinologists, doctors of all specialties, are really enraged that there hasn't been more emphasis put on early treatment of COVID. In fact, on the CDC website, they say if you think you have COVID and you have these symptoms, they just say stay in bed and literally wait until you turn blue. Well, to me, that doesn't even sound reasonable. Who waits till they're that sick to go get care? And when on TV, you can see ads for cold sores that they're saying, take a Breva at the first sign of a cold sore. So we have a potentially deadly virus, but they're not telling us to take anything at the first sign. Makes no sense.
It does not. And you led that by saying that there's really a bias. And you alluded to the fact that a lot of the early treatments are readily available and very inexpensive. This bias, do you think that it is, I mean, if you were to classify it, would you say that much of it is more political, or is it for financial gain? Perhaps, you know, people scratching each other's back, or is there something that we don't even know about that, or that we haven't talked about perhaps, that is causing this seeming, what I'd like to say is an attempt to not treat this as effectively as it could be treated.
It's interesting you frame it that way, because money and politics seem to go together. Let's look at the millions and millions and millions of lobbying money, campaign money that's been donated to all lawmakers by Big Pharma. Does that affect their decisions? Hey, I'd like to think people are upstanding, ethical people, but over the years, sadly, we've learned otherwise. I'd like to think that as soon as President Trump opens his mouth and said something positive about a drug or a treatment, that immediately it's like, whoa, that must be awful. The words came from President Trump's lips. The obnoxious statement by Kamala Harris saying, I'm not going to take any vaccine that President Trump made. Was he in the lab making it? No. And I mean, so that's just silly, but it shows where people's heads are. And this isn't the first time that we've had bad advice from the supposed experts. We certainly, Fauci has a trail of bodies behind him. So no one is infallible in this whole COVID thing. And the thing that bothers me, when the powers that be, the CDC, NIH, and Fauci made a mistake about something, why don't they just come out and say, you know what? I was wrong. COVID is new to me. I didn't know. So let's tell people the truth, because it's true. Every day, we're learning more and more and more about the fine tuning of this disease. Just like many diseases, even diseases that have been around a long time, somebody might discover something about it, and it's a real aha moment. And why these people at the top can't just act like normal human beings instead of our overlords and say, we were wrong when we told you this. Now we've discovered something new, and then tell you a path to take from there.
Dr. Fauci, I think, does definitely qualify as an overlord. And I'll admit, I've had a challenging time getting a real read on him from a motivational perspective. You know, sometimes I feel that he is just an egomaniac, that he just loves the spotlight. Other times I think, oh my gosh, there's something deeper to this, because number one, he flip-flops regularly. Number two, you know, he treats his, when it's convenient, he's the utmost expert on the topic. When it's less convenient, he's like, hey, I don't know. So, you know, my easy question, number one, is should Dr. Fauci be in the position that he's in? And I have a follow-up question to that. Or should he have perhaps have been fired months ago, in your opinion?
I think he should have been fired months ago, but that's where the politics enters. And I'm sure the president thought, oh, if I fire this guy, anything that happens after this, it'll all be on me. And Fauci, it's kind of interesting listening to him now. He talks in kind of this third person, as if it was someone else who was doing all the medical stuff last year. There's a book called Good Intentions by Bruce Nussbaum. And this is about Dr. Fauci and the AIDS epidemic. And one of the things that's interesting in the book are descriptions of him, that he was Dapper Dan and he likes the spotlight. Now, that in itself isn't a disqualifier. I mean, Joe Namath liked the spotlight, but he was still a good football player. So it's more that he seems not to know everything that he's talking about, or if he does know, he's keeping things from the public. I think the thing that was so appalling is in the beginning, he said, don't worry about this. no need to wear a mask, ha 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 ha, have sex with people on Tinder. Whether he was joking or not, who'd want to have sex with people on Tinder anyway? But be that as it may, it was completely cavalier. And then all of a sudden, it's this loss of memory. And, oh no, you have to do this, you have to do that, you have to wear a mask for the rest of your life, you have to stay on lockdown for the rest of your life. And then even when the CDC says, well, kids can go back to school, it seems like depending on what the politicians want, he will either agree, disagree. And this is one of those things, I wish you could have tapes and run all the tapes of everything that he said. And again, people can make mistakes. Things change. Circumstances change. I mean, gee whiz, you know, people suddenly discovering that germs cause things and changing from thinking it was evil humors that came from the air. I mean, things change, but admit it. And now, because, you know, the worst thing that happens because of that is then people don't believe anything. And we need people to pay attention to certain things, do certain things, take certain precautions, wash their hands. But it's to the point now where everybody thinks, not everybody, but people become doubters and then don't listen to good advice. And that's very bothersome.
We're on with Dr. Marilyn Singleton, discussing COVID-19, amongst other topics. Listen, we are, you mentioned in the last answer that Dr. Fauci seems to flip-flop. We've also talked about, you know, let's be clear, there is a lot of, I would say, inappropriate information coming from both sides. We've talked about some from the, we'll call it the medical left, the medical political left, I guess, but even from the right, you know, you were very clear to state that this is an actual disease. It is extremely contagious, and it does have, in many people, it has real severe symptoms and can kill people. We do get those sometimes from the right. We hear people say, oh, you know, this is just it's like the cold. It's a mild cold. And you know, there's the actual number of deaths from it is probably about 3,000 and stuff like that. So I can understand some of the misinformation. With that said, do you think that this, the way that this is being handled, I guess you could say the rollout of the vaccines, the holding kids back from schools, the keeping businesses closed. Do you think that there is medical science behind it that's driving it? Or do you think that the politics are using snippets of medical science to determine what they want to do and how they want to move forward?
It's interesting you use the word science. That's all we've been hearing is follow the science. And then so many of us have the big question, whose science? Because the science has been adulterated, bastardized into using only the data that they want you to see or want you to hear and ignoring other data. And the whole point of science is to have an open discussion. It's not philosophy that can change like the weather and is, oh, Descartes' opinion. No, this should be reproducible results and asking solid questions of people. There's epidemiological lists that should be gone through, and none of this is really being done. It seems like only the data that support what the government wants you to do. And I just hate to say this, but it looks like we're being groomed for more authoritarian control. And as someone, admittedly, I am not for single payer health system. I'm for private practice. I'm for freedom of choice in medicine, so patients have other places to go. But part of this is being used to say, okay, this is now we have more control over the medical system. And COVID is a good excuse. It came at just the right time. It came during an election year. So again, not that COVID isn't a real thing, but the way it's being used is not appropriate. It should be treated like the medical problem that it is, not a political tool to get people to comply with government rules that many do not have a basis in fact. And all we have to do is look at graphs that are now coming out of all the states and how they dealt with lockdowns, going to school, who's gotten sick. And now even the CDC, and CDC had said this several weeks ago, that children could go back to school. So why aren't they back in school? You have teachers unions who say they want this, 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 and this. Some of the things would be practically impossible. And you wonder why. Aren't they there for the kids? Don't they realize all the psychological papers that are coming out now on the damage that could be, some people posit, years long, depending on what age the child is at the time they're being told to walk around with a mask on, walk away from people. It's kind of creepy to me sometimes walking down the street and see maybe a 5 or 6 year old child look at you in horror and kind of scoochy away. And it's not good. It's turning us into robots and dehumanizing us. And boy, once somebody's dehumanized, it's much easier to bully them once people are treated like objects. The idea of actually caring about people as human beings just seems to be drifting away. And the idea that they would put the kibosh on early treatment makes me ask, how much do these folks really care about human beings?
That is a very good question. I do have one. I'm not going to call it a single question. I'm going to ask you a rather loaded question. I want to prepare you for it before I ask it, because what I'm going to ask you is this. I'm going to ask you, if you were in charge, let's say that you were, Dr. Fauci's fired, you know, Kamala Harris calls you and says, hey, Dr. Singleton, can you come lead the efforts, you know, to the planning, you know, maybe can you advise us on how we should do this, how we should do that? So I want you to prepare for that. But before you do, people need to be able to find you. I'd like to find out how do they find you? What, do you have any websites, books? Where can people who are now, because there's going to be lots of them, interested in learning more about Dr. Marilyn Singleton, where can they learn more about you?
At Marilyn Singleton, MDJD.com. And there's articles and links to videos and whatnot, all on that website, plus the contact page.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So yes, and I would definitely recommend reaching out, learning as much as you can, and other show hosts. I know that we have a lot of show hosts on here. Had a nice retweet of a show from Dinesh D'Souza this morning, retweeted our shows. That was fun. And hopefully we'll get more. We used to get tweets of the show from Donald Trump, but alas, he's been purged. So has actually the Knock Report Twitter account, but mine is still alive and well. Anyway, so this final question, it's actually a series of questions. I'm going to throw out a topic. Okay. And you just give us a brief answer and you can take it as long as you'd like, but an answer as far as what would, if Dr. Marilyn Singleton was in charge of the rollout, the recommendations, how do we move forward from today? Not from the beginning. You know, we've acknowledged that Dr. Fauci and you know, NIH and CDC and a lot of these various institutions and organizations have handled this wrong. Now, today, how do we move forward and handle it right? Okay. Are you ready? I know.
There's a reason I'm not a hospital administrator.
Well, no, and that's the thing is that we've had, you know, people often look at Dr. Fauci. Oh my gosh, he's been a doctor for decades and this and that. He's got so much experience. Guys, he's a patent guy. Okay. I mean, his actual medical experience ended decades ago. I think it was 2 or 3 years he spent actually in the medical field before turning to patents and the money side of, but that's a whole other discussion. Okay. You have a clear understanding of a lot of things. And if there's something that you're not sure about, no big deal. But I want to see, you know, I want to tell the audience and perhaps people who are in charge, what is the best way to move forward. So let's start with a relatively easy one. Let's start with schools. How do we, you know, there's concern from parents, there's concern from teachers, but there's also a much greater concern, I believe, right now with how do we get kids back in school, not just for their sake, because that is extremely important, but also for the sake of the economy. You know, parents are stuck not being able to go out because their kids aren't in school, for example. So how do we quickly and safely open up schools?
Well, one, we can look to the states that already have the schools open. And if there's states that are worried that, well, we can't open our schools, go to Mississippi, where children have been in school for quite a while. See how their classrooms are set up. What's wrong with looking at a success? And this is what's so odd to me, is that people seem to be totally stuck in their own idea, as though that idea can't change. I mean, we're always looking for better ideas. So why don't we look to somebody who's been successful? Look to somebody who's had good numbers. Now, the CDC put out guidelines months ago for opening schools, and that included the plexiglass, hand sanitizing, which interestingly, kids never wash their hands anyway. So maybe the good thing that'll come out of all this, it'll get kids to wash their hands. And, you know, not wipe their nose and put it back on the desk. But what were some of the others? Some of the ventilation systems, because that's been shown that ventilation is one of the biggest keys to transmissibility. And the HVAC people know about all the details of that stuff. Far UVC light has been shown to kill the virus, and $2,000 for a normal room size bulb, and it doesn't hurt your skin. So there's things out there that can be done in any school for a lot less money than what we see is being thrown out there in this COVID relief package that has very little to do with COVID. And so people need to get real. And then of course at bottom is, yes, some children have now started to get ill from COVID. And yes, children can likely transmit it. But most of the studies are showing asymptomatic people do not transmit. Just because getting sick from COVID, it seems to be dependent on the viral load. And of course, your load's bigger if you're actually sick. And of course, if you're actually sneezing and coughing. So at bottom, let's have some home testing so people can know on the spot, if you're sick, stay home. Don't go out. Don't go to school. Don't go to work. And all too often, people do that and know that you're not going to get in trouble. Just stay home. And then when you do go out, wash your hands and behave responsibly. Little children, it's harder to make them behave responsibly, but they still need to have recess. They still need to have playtime. And we're finding that they aren't getting sick. In fact, they're showing that children on play dates, there's a lot of places they go, oh, and these kids aren't getting sick. So what's so different about school? And it seems to be the adults, the fear that's been placed in the minds of adults.
Absolutely. The controversial topic, yeah, I'll state up front, I'm not a fan of the vaccines, simply because there's hasn't been tested. I don't like the politics behind them. I think they've been driven out too far. Not a big fan of vaccines in the first place. That's that part I just wanted to state for the record. But let's look at reality here. the vaccines are widely sought after. You know, the anyone who proposed the solution of, oh, we can't have a vaccine, they'll cause riots because people are desperate for the vaccine. So with it understood that vaccines are here and must be used. I'm not going to corner you on your perspective on vaccines, but I want to ask you from a rollout perspective. You know, is this, there's some that are saying, well, you know, it's got to go to the elderly first. Some are saying it's got to go to healthcare workers first. Some are saying it's got to go to the schools first, teachers first. Everybody wants to be first. If you, you know, from your perspective, what would be a good, you know, rollout plan? You don't have to get specifics with logistics or anything like that. But I mean, how should the vaccines be rolled out from here going forward?
Well, certainly healthcare workers should get it first. They're the ones who are most at risk. And that includes paramedics, people, police, fire people, people who are meeting, let's look at it this way, meeting strangers, and they don't know anything about them. And I always felt that way with the ethical question of, if I saw someone dying on the street, would you give them mouth-to-mouth resuscitation? Therefore, I always carried an Ambu bag in my car with me. So I wouldn't have to face a moral dilemma. But and this is what you deal with when you're a frontline worker. You don't know anything about the people. You don't know where they've been. So they certainly should and did get offered the vaccine first. And then this is where I think teachers come in. If teachers are afraid to teach because they're afraid of getting sick, and since having the children in school has these long lasting sequelae from not having kids in school, not allowing their parents to go to work because the kids can't go to school, I give it or offer it to teachers. And then it's like, okay, there's no excuse here. The vaccine has not been tested on children. And again, we talked about children are likely not big transmitters. So if the teacher has the vaccine, let the kids go back to school. And certainly people who have these techie jobs or doing what you're doing, where you can do it from a studio and don't have to have face-to-face contact with somebody, you can be last on the list. Unless you're greater than 65 years old, and which, when you look at the survivability, that's when survivability drops after about 65, 70 years old. And certainly it drops way low after 80. But then there's a problem with the old and frail, that there's a question of whether the vaccine is even too much for them. There have been some elder deaths in the nursing homes, and it's questionable, is it the vaccine, is it not the vaccine? So I would tread very lightly with the very old and frail, but certainly giving it to people 65 plus, or let's say, again, using the word offering it to people, because everybody's not going to accept it. And there's other vaccine types on the horizon. The two that everybody's passing out now are the messenger RNA vaccine. So they're made one way. And then the Johnson & Johnson is made a different way with a cold virus. And then the Novavax is made an entirely different way that's closer to standard vaccines like mumps, measles. And so my suggestion would be, once all of these are available, that people have their choice. And perhaps if people got a choice of what kind they wanted, then more people might take it. For example, Novavax doesn't use the fetal stem cell line that some vaccines use. And that's offensive to many people for physical, religious, whatever their reasons. And they don't want stuff that came from that fetal cell stem cell line. Novavax does not use them. And Novavax doesn't use RNA if people are afraid that that might get into their system and alter them. You know, some of the things that people worry about. So when we have that spectrum, which we will have within a couple of months, let people choose. And I know that that would be technically more difficult than just opening up Dodger Stadium and say, come on down and drive your car through. But so many things in the government are an all or none phenomenon that they don't modify things to suit the individual. And I think this is a time that if you want people to be healthy, you want people to go in the direction of not getting sick from a virus, then we have to think more in terms of individualized treatment. Because guess what? This isn't the last virus we're ever going to see. They've been around for millennia. They will continue to be around. And the more technology we have, the more aware we are of our surroundings, the more we're going to know exactly what virus it is. I mean, years ago, who knew if you actually had influenza? Now they test for it. You know, now they test for the SARS-CoV-2 virus. There's going to be another virus and they're going to have a test for it. So you'll know exactly which virus you have. So they're going to be around. They're going to mutate. Viruses have been mutating for thousands of years. So this isn't the last time we're going to see this. So if there's any time to sit down and go through processes, and I have to say, leave it to the states. Put out some federal guidelines. And if there's one state that's doing horribly, you know, perhaps someone from the feds can step in and say, what are you doing that's so wrong? Is it your population? Is it something the way you're rolling it out? Because sometimes it's the population. Because let's not forget with COVID that other than age, and this is something we all need to pay attention to, obesity is the big risk factor. And what are we Americans? We're fat. And, you know, and this, I'll go on and on. This is another thing that bothers me is they keep on talking about, oh, give this in the hospital and do this and get ventilators and blah, blah, blah. We need to be telling Americans, this is your golden opportunity to turn your life around and start eating well, start getting some exercise, because exercise has been shown to be a positive. Vitamin D is shown to reduce the chance of hospitalization by 54%. So get out in the sun and do something. And we don't hear people saying that when these are simple things that it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, you can do.
And you should. Dr. Marilyn Singleton, this has been wonderful. I mean, I've learned more. I wish we could interview you for another couple of hours, because I have learned more myself about all of this and I consider myself relatively well-versed from a layman's perspective. Apparently I was not. I actually have certain words I have to go look up now, thanks to this interview. Tell us one more time where they can find you on your website. Are you on Twitter? All that good stuff.
Okay. My website is Marilyn Singleton, MDJD.com. And my Twitter is at M Singleton, MDJD. I'm on Parler. I think that's didn't have this memorized. I'm still not into it that much, not using it that much, but getting there. And what I really do recommend is going to aapsonline.org. And that's the website for the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. And right on the first page, there's a picture of a booklet that says early treatment for COVID-19. Click that on, and it's a downloadable booklet. You can read it yourself. It's written so lay people can understand it. And if you feel like you're getting sick, take that booklet to your doctor and sit down, educate your doctor as well.
What an interesting perspective. What an interesting doctor in general. So that was quite a blessing. You know, I held back. I think most of you know my perspective on vaccines is is particularly controversial. But one thing I will admit that Dr. Singleton did alert me to some things that I didn't know, and I like the idea a lot. I like the idea of vaccine choice, having multiple vaccines to choose from, and the choice to not be vaccinated at all. That's something that they've been talking about, you know, really pushing to force people to be vaccinated. And I think that that is inevitable unless people start to get more sane and listen to the real science. As she said, whose science? Well, let's listen to the science, the scientific data that says that we don't have to succumb to authoritarianism, that we don't have to dismiss all of our rights for the sake of a perception of improved healthcare. Let's just get healthier as a nation. And let's do so while maintaining our freedoms as Americans, as humans. So we'll see. Lord willing, I will be back very soon with another episode. But in the meantime, you guys stay strong, stay safe, and God bless.